Hello everybody, I am Lucia Matuonto and welcome to the Relatable Voice podcast, a talk show where my guests and I talk about relatable everyday situations, books, and the environment we live in. Remember to subscribe and follow the podcast on social media so you can be notified when a new episode is available. Let's begin. Hello and welcome to the RV. Today we are headed to Australia to talk with Malita Black. Malita is a psychologist, writer, leader, thinker, and musician. Her latest book entitled Say Something is out now. So Malita, welcome to the Relatable Voice.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a delight to be here to talk with you.
Yes, I was looking forward to talking with you, Malita. And you split your time between Clearwater, Florida, and Australia. You basically live in the best beach places in the world. So what brought you to Australia?
So I went to a university that had a travel program. You could do trips and get university credits, write a paper about the trip, write a paper about the country. And so I did several of those trips, four major trips, over 21 countries, I think. In those four trips, I've since traveled later. But even in my 4 years of uni, I traveled, and one of those was Australia. I met my husband on that trip when we were 19, and we wrote letters before email and internet and things like that. And I moved here when I was 22 and lived here for 30 years. And now I live in Clearwater, but Florida, but I visit Australia because I have children, two sons and grandchildren. I split my time between just to see family. Yeah, it's exciting to be able to do that. And so during COVID, we weren't able to travel, but we've since been free to travel. It's just such a joy. So,
yeah, it's wonderful when you can have two places where you feel at home.
Yes, I do. I do.
And Malita, you describe yourself as an original introverted misfit.
Yes, I think, my book is about finding your voice to a degree. And as a very young person, as a little girl, I didn't speak very much, very quiet, very shy. And I remember adults asking me questions and worrying about what my response would be. And I think that makes you a genuine introvert when you're worried about how you sound and what you say. And I'm pleased to say I don't filter myself that way anymore. But original introvert just means I'm very low in need of frequency to talk. And yet I've chosen an occupation that talks deeply with people as a counselor and coach. But I go very deep with people into deep topics very quickly. And that's also a characteristic of introversion, is to do it less frequently, but to go very deeply with people.
Mm-hmm. And introverts have been stereotyped and misunderstood for a long time. And some people think that introverts are shy and antisocial. What are your thoughts about it?
Yeah, I think it's not antisocial, it's just less frequent. And so I always have extroverts in my world tell me, I'm so sorry that I'm being so extrovert and so extra, whatever. And I say, we actually, introverts love being with extroverts. You actually bring us out of our shell and make us really aware of our need to express ourselves more often. So it's a joy to talk with extroverts. I think we just have to make sure that we retreat often enough to re-energize, restock our source of energy. But otherwise, we enjoy it very much, talking with people. And my introversion shows up when I'm at a social gathering where I don't know anyone. And then I'm very, very quiet. But in an environment where I'm networking or I'm connecting as a professional, that's very different. I put myself out there and I find it very easy to connect and have conversations with people. It's more when it's purely social and I'm surrounded by strangers. So it's every introvert's different. We're not all the same too. So it's a continuum. We still love to connect, still love people.
Yes, of course.
We're just spending more time filtering what is worth saying and not worth saying. And we all naturally assume, I think, that people don't want to hear us talk as often, which is not always the case. It's an assumption and it's, you know, a perspective. Isn't that interesting? If we were all the same, we'd be very boring. So it's
going to
be different.
And Malita, why did you decide to write this book?
Well, as I mentioned, I do counseling and I do a lot of relationships, married couples, people who would like to be married, people who've been married for a long time. But I do also, you know, parents and adult children, people where there's a disconnect. And I found myself repeating some of the same counseling principles, some of the things that I've learned and repeating them often with each client, as you do when you're in counseling. And I thought to myself, you know, it would be good for me, for people who don't want to engage in in-depth counseling, don't want to commit to sessions. Maybe they can't afford it. Maybe one of the partners or one of the people in the partnership doesn't want to do it. I wanted to put the concepts in a book so I could hand it to people who might be interested in counseling or wonder when you seek counseling versus try to do things yourself. And so much of what I teach and do with clients, I didn't invent it, you know, which is most counselors don't invent things. They learn concepts and they learn practices and they repeat them over and over with clients. And I have been trained as a psychologist. I also am a natural communicator. I was raised in a family where my parents fought a lot. And so that taught me to listen for both sides of an argument, right? I always say I had a very blessed upbringing, two very strong parents, very loving parents. And I'm blessed also from their fighting because I learned to listen to what's in the middle between two opinions, right? And I learned to listen for what the other person was not understanding when one person spoke. So I learned to hear where they were missing each other. Mm-hmm. And so most of my book is centered around expectations, really listening and really saying what you need to say as clearly as you can. And so I'm very proud of it because I can hand it to a couple who doesn't necessarily want to pay for counseling and have them get a copy each and read it together and their lines in there to write in and they can go through the exercises together, which is exciting for me. Mm-hmm. For those that don't want to come in front. Some people are embarrassed to come in front of a counselor, and I understand that. And so it's a good way to reach people that I may never reach otherwise.
Mm-hmm. And what is the most challenging aspect when it comes to counseling a couple?
I think when both members of a couple are engaged and both want things to be better, it's very easy. Very easy, straightforward, because they do the work and they come back and they, you know, tell you how they applied the learning and things like that. One of the struggles is when both might say, yes, I want counseling, but one of them really doesn't. one of them might be hiding the fact to protect the feelings of the other, that they actually don't want it to work. And so um, in in my experience, I'm able to usually figure that out fairly quickly and bring it up as, you know, an obvious lack of intention. But I also start every couple with, you know, what are your intentions? Because it's very important. Sometimes they tell me the truth and sometimes they don't.
Yeah.
So really the uncovering of intention. But again, I find that just asking straight out what, you know, you say that you would like this, but your behavior says otherwise. And so really understanding the gap between what they say they want and what they actually are doing. But that's, it's not an unachievable challenge. It's just one of the challenges.
And as a counselor, are there ever situations where it's clear that the relationship is not working and that the two people are better off apart, or can all relationships be fixed?
If both parties want them to be fixed, they can all be fixed. But if, as I mentioned before, if any part of that partnership, or let's call it a communication couple, because it could be a parent and a child, it could be a married couple, an engaged couple, it could be a brother and a sister. If any member of that coupling doesn't want for things to improve, then there are some times where we discuss setting up boundaries or the ending of a relationship. And I discuss that in my book a little bit. You know, how do you know when, if you're the one trying so, so hard, how do you know when enough is enough and you've done all you can? And there are some, you know, distinct ways you can know that, including generally, if people's behavior is very different to what they say, and when you confront it, it is identified as, you know, not having that intention. And so my mission is to have people confront it, not in an angry way, but in an assertive way that says, you know, what is it that you do want? Because nobody wants to keep trying when the other person isn't trying, you know? It's not fun to be in a one-sided effort, right?
Yeah.
So, sometimes I help people get divorced. I do.
You do?
Yes, I do.
And your book is entitled Say Something. Why did you choose this title?
So I've watched enough romantic movies, and I've watched in my own relationship, when you're very, very frustrated with someone else, and you're at your wit's end and you feel like you've said everything you need to say, often you'll get to a frustrated moment in an argument where you're literally yelling out, say something, you know. And so it's kind of delivered softly, you know, say something, just be assertive. But also it's encapsulating the frustration when we're in the midst of a big meltdown and a frustration when the other person has stopped speaking. They've stopped speaking for a reason, typically because they don't want to speak. And so it was inspired by that frustration point in all arguments where you say something. And now I watch movies and TV shows, I see it all the time. I'm like, they either say something or they say do something, you know. So maybe my next book is do something.
And you know, in this situation, I think the better reaction, for example, if I'm fighting with someone, if this person is quiet and doesn't say anything, I think it's so annoying. So please say something. It's, you expect that person say something.
Yes. And the point of the book is that we all get to areas of flooded emotion, right? John and Julie Gottman, our relationship experts, and they talk about being flooded and in a state of shutdown, common terminology. And when we're in a state of shutdown, that's usually when someone else is telling us to say something. or they say, use your words, or like, tell me what you're thinking. You know, that's, we hear that sometimes too. And so it's natural to get to flooded emotions where you feel overwhelmed and you don't want to talk. But my mission is to say, okay, if you don't want to talk right now, let's negotiate a time when I can go cool down, or I can go do something else for a little while, and we'll come back and talk. We might, you know, in the book, I talk about doing things together, like taking a walk where we can just walk and talk and think while we're actually active, having appointment times to talk, because inevitably our arguments come when we're ready to talk and the other person isn't ready to talk, they're relaxing, or vice versa. And, you know, trying to get in sync where people don't want to make those formal appointments. But my point is, you have to in a serious partnership, whether it be romantic or otherwise, you have to make appointments for almost everything. And it's better that you do, because then you can say, okay, 2 o'clock on Saturday, we're going to sit down and we're going to talk about our money or our budget, or we're going to talk about our sex life or whatever the case may be. But we're going to talk about it. And so you have this time to get ready. I have this time to get ready. Let's not be surprised when we talk about it. and so it's, to me, it's all about that communication around our communication. It's kind of that extra meta level of communication that we often skip because we think the other person should know us and read our minds and meet our needs. And sometimes they do, and sometimes they don't. Sometimes we have to help them. So it's interesting. We're not always on the same page just because we love each other. I have a chapter called Love is Not Enough, you know. Love is wonderful, but it's not enough. You have to have communication, and you have to have practices and routines and things that keep you safe, right?
Interesting. I think anyone should...
And it's available where you are. I think it is. Yeah.
Also, why is it so difficult in some situations to ask for important things at work, for example, without feeling fear?
Yeah, I think ultimately our biggest childhood fear is that we're not enough to have our needs met. That we're not unconditionally loved. And in the workplace, unconditional love isn't a given at all. There's a company that employs us typically. And so when you combine our natural fears of not being enough with also knowing that we're battling against the needs of an organization that has obvious corporate goals and money-making goals naturally, as it should, That's when it becomes very, very challenging to bring up difficult topics in the workplace. Also, the things like power differentials, which simply means someone else above me has power over my position, that causes there to be, you know, a challenge in building rapport that is fully trusting. This is why it's very important to pick the people you choose to work with and give your life to. People that have at least similar values to you as a human being. Otherwise, this will make it even more challenging, right? If you know you work for a company that's there to make money, and you know you also have a person you work for that is not a good fit with you personally, you also then believe you're not worthy, it makes it very challenging. So there's lots of layers to that, right? I do a lot of corporate work as well. Executive coaching and individual coaching with people who are transitioning out of corporate, but also trying to be more assertive with their management. I work with managers who are also managing staff and having challenge bringing up behavioral, you know, or performance topics, which I did for many, many years as a leader. And so, you know, it's always what will they think of us, you know? what will they think of us? They'll think I'm a bad person, or they'll think I'm not worth it, or that's really the messaging that's in our childlike minds. And so we have to overcome that fear.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you think that nowadays some leaders are more understanding?
I think there's a lot of, first of all, as younger people become leaders, you know, in their generation, 30s and 40s, they expect more communication. They expect more compassion generally. And this is a very big generalization, but they do expect much more tolerance of each other. And they less and less accept just a power position over me, right? And so certainly when I was coming up as a young leader, that was not even a question, whether someone had power over you. They certainly did. But now, as the younger generations come up into leadership, they do expect that more. There is, in some ways, more conflict that comes from so many expectations being met at once. But in other ways, it's good that it's getting out. It's good that it's being spoken about, at least. And so it's beginning to shift entire corporate cultures, because they have to come up with core values that they all agree on, you know, across the age gaps and across generations. So I think there are still some who, you know, come at leadership from a power perspective. Unfortunately, it's all they've ever known, and they don't plan to change. So often, you know, they leave the corporate environment because they run into that frustration over and over again. So there's a real shift happening in the corporate setting of needing to be there for people. I do some work with workplaces where I help human resources work with two managers in conflict, for example. And I really love that work because I'm taking two high-producing managers who are both equally valued by the company. The company does not want to fire anyone. And I'm helping them work together in partnership at the same level and helping them understand that we're all different and helping them find words where they don't feel like they are suppressed, but they are also seeking out, you know, the opinions of other people and finding the middle ground. And I find that very satisfying. Very satisfying. And when that can't be done, one person usually leaves, you know, if they simply don't want to participate in the shift.
And Marlita, you've accomplished a lot, and I know you have a lot of goals. What are you currently working on or hoping to accomplish next?
So I'm looking at, first of all, I want to write more books. I haven't finalized what the next book idea is, but writing to me is a joy. It's a deep spiritual practice that just helps me express the joy I feel at writing this first book is enormous. Even this is how you know you're a writer. If you write and you don't even know who buys it, you know that you're a writer and you're so excited to write. Secondly, I'm working on, you know, looking into being trained as a family law mediator. So taking the couples counseling, understanding that I have the dynamic of hostility between two members of a marriage who are breaking up and how they punish each other, so to speak, in their separation, taking that natural knowledge that I've been exposed to with clients into a law environment excites me very much. Being someone who could mediate and help shorten the time it takes to separate and get divorced to me is meaningful work. Meaningful because the children involved, if there are children, suffer from lengthy, drawn out lack of mediation, lack of, you know, agreement, lack of negotiation. So It's for the children, but it's also for the individuals. You know, when there are no children, still very important to me that they bring peace into their lives. I'm a big believer in peace, a big believer that you don't want to spend your life, your karma, your energy fighting another human being. It's just the biggest waste of life, as far as I can tell. So I, you know, that excites me very much. I'm looking into training for that. And then there are many hours you have to practice it to be fully accredited. So maybe this time next year.
This is wonderful, Melita. Congratulations.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
And what message would you like to leave for our listeners today?
I think if you've been a person who finds yourself running from situations or leaving situations over and over again, and you find yourself, you know, repeating the same kind of dynamics in work interactions or relationship interactions, and you always come to this brick wall, there's work to be done on finding how to break through that pattern. So I'm a big believer that we all have patterns that we do, patterns that keep us safe, patterns that feel familiar and in their own way, comfort us because they're familiar. But in another way, they keep us from growing. If you're one of those people that finds, you know, you're repeating some of the same life lessons over and over, I would challenge you to read my book and really try to pinpoint and identify in a self-reflective way what you could work on. We tend to make the other person the bad person. That's natural. It's natural human nature to make the other person the bad person. However, there's always work we can do. My book is aimed at having you look at yourself and not point the finger or blame others, but to take accountability for yourself. So that's my biggest lesson, is look at yourself, what you could learn, what you could do better. And ultimately, you'll attract better interactions. I truly believe that.
Yes, I also believe that, Melita. And where can we find you online?
So the book is available on Amazon worldwide. And so I'm not sure of every country, whether they use Amazon US or they have their own Amazon website, but it's available on Amazon. You just search for Say Something, Marlita Black, or just Black if it's easier for you. Uh-huh. My name's a bit tricky. But the book is written in the tone of an adventure. So it's appealing for men and women alike. It's written as if you're going on a major hiking expedition. You wouldn't do that unprepared. And it's the same notion with relationships, with conversations. You don't go in unprepared. You prepare yourself. And so, check it out on Amazon. And when you've read it, leave me a review. That's exciting to see.
Yeah, reviews are gold for us, yes, authors. And also, do you have a website or social media that you would like to share as well?
Yes. And so, Marlita Black Coaching. So that's Marleta. MarlitaBlackCoaching.com is my website. And I do see clients all around the world. I have clients in Australia and the USA, all over the USA, as well as South Africa at the moment. And so because I do a lot of Zoom work, online coaching and counseling is very normal for me. And I practice as a coach because psychology licensing is very unique to Australia. And so I'm very careful to keep to my ethical boundaries as to my licensing in each country. And so I practice as a coach. That is the easiest way for me to practice my expertise and make sure that if people need more help, mental health or very specific help that's of a clinical nature, I can refer them to other people. So MarlitaBlackCoaching.com is the best way.
Wonderful. And Marlita, come back when you write. Do something.
That's an idea, right? I think it makes a lot of sense. I think so.
Yes. So thank you very much for your time. It was such a pleasure to speak with you. And
pleasure to talk to you too. Thank you so much.
If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe so you'll be notified when the next one is posted. Please rate this podcast and share it with your friends. Thank you for listening. And remember, relationships don't exist. Relating does. Until next time.
Spin your passion into a business with Shopify and break sales records with the world's best converting checkout. Let's hear that one more time. The world's best converting checkout. Shopify's legendary checkout makes it easier for customers to shop on your website, across social media, and everywhere in between. Now that's music to your ears. Any way you spin it, you can be a smash hit with Shopify. Start your $1 a month trial today at shopify.com/records.